Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, joined by colleagues Tom Deanhart and Brian Newbert, who will be giving you words of wisdom here in the next few minutes as we talk about the news of the week in Purdue athletics, Purdue basketball, Purdue football, recruiting, et cetera. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel. It's a Purdue it is at Purdue, obviously, a Travel and Leisure World's Best Hotel in Indiana nominee. And as we tell you just about every week, voting is now open. It's been open for a while. So visit the PurdueUnionClubHotel.com for more details. And we're thrilled that also the Union Club will be working with us. We've got a couple of new ideas for next year with the Union Club and Golden Black, and we'll be working with them in 2021-22. So we appreciate them very much. Also, a reminder, too, that you can subscribe, become a member of GoldenBlack.com. You just come to our front page. There's some opportunities also to click on links to become a member of and be part of our community. All right, Brian, I'll start with you. I think the big news of the week, at least from my perspective, is something we all expected, and that was the announcement that Ross Age Stadium will be full, or at least be at capacity. Anything about behind the scenes from your perspective that you take from that message? I mean, again, we kind of knew this was coming, but they were waiting for the Indiana or the Tippecanoe County Health Department to kind of give its all clear before they made their announcement. But what from your perspective, anything new and different on this deal in terms of bringing things back to normal?
No, I think this was a reasonable expectation all along. We would have had to really have screwed up as a society, you know, to not be back to full capacity the second fall after the pandemic hit. And obviously, I think our vaccination rates and whatnot have gotten, while they're not ideal, I wouldn't think. I think we've gotten to the point now where, you know, things are back open. I think that all along, it was a reasonable expectation that, you know, Ross Age Stadium and stadiums around the country would be full again this season. And I would assume it follows suit for all the indoor sports in the winter as well. So things might not be necessarily normal, but they're going to be the most normal that they've been in a long, long time. I wouldn't think there's going to be any real mitigation type stuff in place. Obviously, you're not going to social distance in a full capacity venue. But it is going to be interesting to see what long-term, you know, changes come out of all of this. You know, I've said from day one of all of this that I think the days of the paper ticket are probably going by the wayside. I think the days of cash transactions in places like football stadiums are probably going by the wayside. I think a lot of the, you know, the sanitation protocols that came into place during this pandemic, as Mike Babinski himself has said, hey, maybe this was what we should have been doing all along anyway. Perhaps we could have cut down on the common cold had we been doing this kind of stuff all along. So maybe things are going to look different on the back end of this, but I think that this is going to be pretty close to normal come September.
You know, Tom, Purdue talked in the video when they made the announcement about, masks are not going to be required, obviously, in Ross Age Stadium. It looks like tailgating will be back to relative normal. You know, I think the vaccination rate in Tippecanoe County is at 44%. They're hoping that number goes up. And it's, as Brian mentioned, it is inching up. Purdue University, I think, will have a policy from what we understand also will be vaccine recommended or vaccine preferred kind of status, but not going to mandate it to like Indiana University has. But just all these things that we talk about, but maybe the best thing is you can exhale and say, there is going to be Purdue football, and they are nimble enough from an electronic ticketing standpoint that if they have to make a change, if there's something changes with the virus, they can do so. But this is all things that we never thought we'd talk about 2 years ago, but now it's part of the wheelhouse as we look forward to the 2021 season.
Yeah, I think Brian summed it up pretty well. I mean, it was a decision that we all anticipated. Some other schools already made this announcement. I know Minnesota had, among others. So, it's just great news for everybody, right? And we'll It's just going to be nice to have fans back. I think I've said before, guys, I tell you what, you never realized the impact, maybe I didn't, that fans had on just a game watching experience. Or maybe I never appreciated it, you know, watching these games on television, especially. I really found it hard to watch games with no fans. Even this NHL playoff, when they have a game in Montreal with the tarps over the stands, I don't know. It's you really come to appreciate the packed environment, the intensity, and just the overall atmosphere that a large crowd brings to an event. And to have that back, and for college football, boy, the marching bands, the cheerleaders, the color, the pageantry, to have that all back in the mix for 2021 has me really excited. So I'm pleased that we're at this point now, guys. I was thinking the other morning, this time last year, late June 2020, sort of the doom and gloom that hung over everything and everybody, all of the unknowns just dotted our landscape. And boy, 12 months later, no, here we are. Again, I, for one, am very happy. I'll say that for sure.
Yeah, we got, I think, was it August? The first week of August was when they announced the first set of schedules. And we were definitely in a holding pattern a year ago with this weekend in terms of what was going to transpire. I'll come back to you, Tom, just because you had the experience this week and Brian's been in it and watched a little bit of football, Jeff Brom's recruiting camps. You actually physically walked in, just the vibe. What was that like to actually do that again for the first time in a long time for you?
Yeah, Brian was there. We got to see Kelly Kitchell, everybody's good friend Kitch, and it was packed. I mean, I think I asked somebody to guesstimate, maybe it was Brian or Kitch or somebody, but maybe 300 kids they thought were there, and the sidelines were packed with family members of the camp attendees. It was cool. I just always loved being around football. In some ways, I really almost enjoyed going to events like that and practices sometimes as much, if not more, than games. Just being up close and watching the guys do their drills. So it was fun. And again, the coaches have to be pleased to get their more up close and personal look at these recruits. Sense of normalcy returns as well. There was a large contingent of high school football players. The workouts began in the Mollenkopf, and then most of them matriculated to the outdoor field. So it was at least a couple hour process. It's kind of cool to see DJ Knox out there, guys. He was working with the running backs with Chris Barclay. Of course, DJ back as I believe a GA this year as well. And just seeing some of the other coaches out there working out. So, again, just for me, just another sign that, hey, we are headed back to at least a somewhat normal existence here coming up shortly, if not now.
You know, Brian, obviously Purdue's got a big football recruiting weekend. These camps seem to be more emphasis on younger players, not necessarily a lot of 2022 guys that are in these camps, but they do serve their purpose of getting some people on campus and getting younger players to get some opportunity to see what it's like to be in front of Jeff Brom and company.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily the sole purpose. I mean, you would like to have all sorts of classes of high-level player there, ideally, but a really big part of what Purdue's done over the years has been getting these guys on campus early, getting them evaluated, getting them offered. A lot of the guys they've gotten over the years, a lot of the best guys they've gotten over the years have been guys who've been at their camps as a freshman or a sophomore or whatever, gotten their offer early, Purdue's locked into them, built that relationship over the next year or so, and that's given them a chance and in some cases gotten them over the hump. That's been, in terms of turnout, from what I understand here with these two camp sessions in June, that's been kind of the important part of this, is that there have been 2023 and 2024 guys at these camps. Tay Johnson from Fort Wayne, Joe Walker from Indy, Dylan Thieneman the other day from Westfield. Everybody will know his name who follows Purdue football. Those are guys who are underclassmen who, you know, Purdue got offers out to, be it because of the camp or separate from the camp. Always good to have those guys on campus, obviously. Gets you off to a decent start in their recruitments, especially highly competitive ones. So that's been the biggest part of the camps for Purdue in June. Now, the issue with this recruiting cycle for Purdue isn't necessarily, it's obviously in large part the fact they didn't have any of these kids. They just signed these 2021s on campus this past year, but they didn't have the 2022s either. So this is, you know, the ramifications of COVID and recruiting aren't going to be isolated to just the one class that got, that felt the brunt force of the dead period. It's going to kind of trickle through the classes to come because Purdue didn't get those underclassmen visits. So the more younger guys, you know, Purdue can get on campus now, the faster they're going to offset that, that part of the ramifications of the pandemic. What's on my monitor here?
I don't know. I can't see. I'm not seeing anything. It looks fine to me. Tommy and Charlie Kendrick, you talked to him, and Purdue obviously got a commitment out of a tight end, and Brian can speak to on the recruiting side, but you had a chance to talk to kind of it seems like a good get. And what was your impression, not only of his coach, but having a chance to talk to him as well?
Yeah, I mean, a football player's football player, guys. His head coach, call him a throwback. Maybe that's cliched, but just a real tough guy. You know, you kind of even get that impression talking to him. And they run triple option offense at Lakota East High School. He plays actually wingback on offense and outside linebacker on defense. He's going to be a tight end. He thinks the transition will be easy. And again, this is a guy who's going to help your football team. Special teams as well, at least I think so. Football seems important to him, guys. And boy, you talk about deep Purdue roots. Father's a Purdue grad. His father's mother and dad are Purdue grads. And there's a set of grandparents who are Purdue grads as well. So Charlie Kendrick is dipped deep in black and gold. Been to campus many times. His family had season tickets at one point. He's excited, as Brian's written and talked about. Charlie was a big priority for Purdue. So he was a nice get. He was somebody they really wanted. He's not going to get to Purdue early, he told me. But again, a multi-sport athlete too, guys, a very good basketball player and a good baseball player. He's playing ball right now. He's a pitcher. So just a fun guy to speak with. And, you know, we can talk too about these transfers, guys. We're getting up on D-Day, July 1st. Brian wrote about this in Weekly Word. It's not an overstatement to talk about the importance of these guys coming in. As he noted, that they're not coming in to wear a ball cap and then hold a clipboard. These guys have to contribute. And the defensive side of the ball in particular has just been injected with, I think, 8 transfers so far, just 3 on offense. So, again, 4 defensive linemen, guys. 4 D linemen are coming in. You got a whole D line. You got 2 tackles and 2 ends, 3 D backs and a linebacker to this point. So again, these guys got to hit the ground running and really make a big impact. We all know what has to be done on defense this year. So many new parts, new coaches, new scheme, new players. Boy, and then we're going to jump right in the deep end with Oregon State in that opener. It's going to be really fascinating to watch this all play out.
Yeah, you have that, Brian. And the fact that, you know, we've talked about this just about every week on this in terms of the impact of the transfer portal on the recruiting class and what those numbers will do. Do you get a sense that do you have to wait almost through this cycle to have any feel of whether it's going to be 7-8 guys a year? I mean, we're already talking about 11. I'm talking about at Purdue in terms of guys that you can plan for from a transfer standpoint, and thus lower the size of your high school class. I mean, is it too early to make that call just yet? Do you have a sense that Purdue will be doing more or less of this down the road?
I think this is probably your new normal. I mean, this, you know, look how many guys Purdue brought in last year too. There were a couple of JUCOs in last year's class, and they needed those guys to be good right away. Outside of DeMarcus Mitchell, am I forgetting somebody? Who else really helped them last year of the guys who came in as immediately eligible?
No, Giovanni Howard.
Yeah, he didn't. He
DJ Johnson. The Iowa.
DJ Johnson did nothing.
They didn't get the bump they were probably anticipating. Austin Burton.
Obviously Tyler Coyle might have had a chance to had he been available more. But I mean, that's what they did last year. And I'd imagine this is what they're going to do every year now with the portal. It might not be quite as pronounced. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get to the point where some of these multi-year transfers you're bringing in are good, you might not, that might fill a need for a few years. So you might not have to plug the same positions every single year. But, you know, Purdue's been recruiting offensive tackles and DBs in the transfer market every year for like a decade. So I don't see, something would have to change pretty acutely for that to stop. And it's just going to be so easy now. And it's going to be such a part of college football culture. I shouldn't say easy. It's probably hell on the coaches, but it's so readily available now. It's not a matter of just looking for a graduate transfer who might be able to help you. It's now you look for anybody because there's going to be 1,000 guys at your fingertips at all times. This is going to be what it is every year, I think. I mean, it might not be 10 guys every year, but it might be 7. You have to do a really good job evaluating these guys. And I don't know how you do that exactly, because when a guy's not playing a whole lot at one school, you don't have a lot of video. And I don't know, you have to be really connected and you have to have really good people who are going to shoot you straight on guys, whether it's high school coaches, whether it's the coaches at a kid's prior school who might be inclined to convince you to take the kid off their hands. It's just a really treacherous market because you have coaches covet certainty. They covet information, and this all happens so quickly and over such short windows of time that there's just only so much you can control with this. So it is going to be a really treacherous market for a lot of people. But I think it's a market Purdue's going to have to thrive in, you know, for the purpose of long-term stability in its program, because it's not going to have 44 guys every year out of the high school ranks who are legit good. Depth is always an issue at Purdue. It's always going to be an issue at Purdue, and it's not going to change anytime soon while everything else changes around it.
You know, Tom, you know, I think one of the, you know, you over the years of look at, you know, after the season's over, you look at, oh, who's got the best chance of looking or being really good next year. Sometimes those predictions are going to change. But I would argue too, that a lot of these position changes, or at least at Purdue, it seems, are guys that may have to make an impact, but they're not necessarily frontline stars, but they're going to give you the depth you need and allow you to maybe withstand. But is that make it harder to evaluate just what we're going to see in Minnesota or Wisconsin or Purdue in terms of just how good these teams, from a preseason prediction standpoint, how good they're going to be? I mean, how do you evaluate that within this transfer world?
I think that these guys are certainly going to have an impact across the nation, and maybe it complicates prognostication a little bit, but I think, I don't think it's going to overly alter, you know, how we view teams going into the year. I mean, I'm sure maybe in some instances, guys, some of these players are going to, for some schools, are going to have huge impacts, but by and large, I think most of them are probably viewed upon as being, I guess, space fillers and contributors. But again, maybe there's some stars. Certainly, if you get a quarterback, that can make a huge difference at a position like that. But for Purdue guys, you know, again, back to the defense, and at least in my mind, I want to do a deeper dive on these guys in July once the roster, I guess, is more set.
Yeah.
I really, really try to give people an idea of the roles of these players and, their impact. And again, I think Purdue's got quite a few. This Marcus Cushney kid they just got from Alabama A&M could really help as a pass rusher, an undersized guy. I like him a heck of a lot. The safety from Findlay College, Christopher Jefferson's another one. Jamari Brown, the cornerback from Kentucky. I think he has a shot to start. OC Brothers, the Auburn linebacker. And then, of course, Tyler Witt, I think, is going to start at right guard, along with Mitchell Finneran, the kicker from Stanford. Stanford. So without a doubt,
big difference.
It's going to be a huge from these guys.
Yeah, no doubt. Brian, big day Thursday, I should say, for Purdue basketball. I mean, it's kind of a trifecta of good news. Travion Williams decides He's coming back. Jaden Ivey and Caleb First make the under 19 USA team. You know, can there be any more? I mean, it's been just been a lot of good news for Purdue men's basketball, it seems like, over the last few weeks. And I know there's still basketball recruiting to be done, but this is was a momentous day on Thursday in terms of those three guys.
Yeah, I mean, on the surprise quotient to a lot of it probably wasn't all that high. Trevion Williams, yeah. I thought we all expected to come back. He would have had to made a pretty a decision that would have gone kind of against the grain here. So I think everybody was kind of assuming he'd be back, and rightfully so. And so the fact he didn't take this all the way into July, you know, was probably a welcomed announcement. It gives Purdue a little bit of certainty, all that stuff. And I remember a few years ago, Caleb Swanigan announcing at the very last second when I was in the car driving to Florida with my family. So thankfully for him, he made this announcement when the people it affects were at their computers, which is always, always a positive thing for us selfishly. But I don't think there's any surprise there. I think, you know, he's obviously a really important piece to Purdue's team next year. One of a couple, once again, Purdue has just an obscene wealth of riches at center between him and Zach Edey. I think Zach Edey is going to be Purdue's breakout player next year. And as of right now, he's not even a starter. So I think it's going to be a really interesting thing to watch next year with Trevion Williams back. Jaden Ivey, I thought, was a lock for that team. You know, when you look at all the high school kids there, I thought the college kids had a natural advantage. And I think, you know, Jaden Ivey could be one of the best players in college basketball before he's all done at Purdue, whenever that might be. And I just thought he was a lock to make that team. And sure enough, but for Caleb First, you know, for First, I kind of thought this was like a get your foot in the door, get the experience, and then maybe in a year, try out for the 20 and under team, you know, something like that. He ends up making the team alongside a bunch of really high end, you know, incoming freshmen. That is validation of what Purdue has here. I've always said about Caleb First is that he's a little bit kind of easy to take for granted, to kind of overlook a little bit, just because what he does so well generally is so unexciting is a bad word, but it's kind of what I'm getting
workmanlike
at.
Yeah,
man. What he's defined by is steadiness, consistency, and effort, and all of those things. Nobody runs to Twitter to gush about, you know, consistency or effort, things like that, but that's what he is. He's the consummate he's a pillar of consistency. He tries really hard on top of his physical talent and his skills. But this is a reminder how good he is. And I think that, you know, this will be a great experience for him, regardless of how much he plays, regardless of how much he performs. This is a guy who, you know, has won state titles in high school, who played up as a 16-year-old and 17 and under EYBL on the Nike circuit and did well. This is a guy who, you know, might carry that small school stigma to a certain extent, but has been tested, you know, more than most players coming into college have been tested. And I think he's going to be much better off right away for all the body of experience that he's built. And this will be one more rung on that ladder. This is a really big deal for him. I think it's a really big deal for Jaden Ivey too. You remember what this kind of experience did for Carson Edwards. I thought it really helped him take his game to the next level that year. Playing with great players, playing against really high-end competition, hearing from other coaches. You know, people talk about how one of the benefits of this sort of experience is your coach might gain more credibility when they go get coached by other people who are accomplished in their field, and they say a lot of the same stuff as your coach back at school. When Trevion Williams went and played for Bruce Weber, and, you know, obviously, naturally, Bruce Weber and Matt Painter kind of share a brain. But when Trevion Williams goes and plays for Bruce Weber, and he's hearing all the same stuff from Bruce Weber as he hears from Matt Painter back in West Lafayette, maybe that gives Matt Painter's messages a little more resonance with those players. So these experiences are all positive for these guys.
Yeah, I think it works the same thing as parenting too. When your kids hear something from somebody else that reinforces things at home, and I think it you're right. It's hard to argue the experience those guys are going to get with USA basketball. So, all right, guys, that's kind of a wrap on our show. We'll have Brian by the time this hits the site, we'll be doing some more basketball this weekend as well. Tom, still, you know, the transfer portal will keep us hopping through at least through Wednesday or Thursday of next week. So more of that to come as well. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel at Purdue, Travel and Leisure World's hotel in best hotel in Indiana nominee. And we thank them for their business. And we wish all of you a good weekend, rest of your weekend. And we'll look forward to our Saturday simulcast next week, a July 4th weekend, as we get ever so close to the start of football training camp, et cetera. We're not going to wish our summer away, but there is July is all that separates us pretty much now from the start of football in West Lafayette. So have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks so much for watching and listening, and we'll talk to you next week.